You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
It was only a matter of time before we had a movie where Joaquin Phoenix was playing like a tired, like strung out assassin, right?
Yeah, we were bound to get there. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was only a matter of time. Like, he's just the guy that you go, well, of course you are. And Joaquin Phoenix seems to be fitting that weird niche where he's like, oh, you don't even have to lose weight, dude. You can be an overweight.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, is he entering his old man action movie phase?
Well, yeah, also he was an overweight, like, you know, sort of disillusioned college professor in that Woody Allen movie a couple years ago. So,
well, that's not body shame, guys.
Okay.
I'm not certainly saying like,
I want to be able to be in an action movie too, you know.
And you want to be a dysfunctional assassin.
Yeah.
But the thing is,
see you doing that, Miguel.
I think the point is like, yeah, it's about the sort of mentality behind him, you know.
I mean, I guess this is Lynn Ramsey doing You Were Never Really Here, which I will say I've not seen some of her very celebrated films like Ratcatcher, which I hear great things about, or Morvern Cellar. But her movie, We Need to Talk About Kevin, was a game changer.
It really was.
Great, like, holy shit.
You never thought you could make a movie about that book. And she did. Yeah. And it was so stirring, yeah.
And this movie, which is also based on a book by the same name, by Jonathan Ames, with Joaquin Phoenix playing a not wildly sympathetic assassin who is not super cool. Like, he's not like some sort of like, this is not a role that was ever offered to the dude from Mad Men.
Liam Neeson doesn't have to worry about this.
Yeah, exactly. This is a guy who, as we see right from the beginning, has already made his kill.
Yeah.
Like, the guy's dead in a bed, and he's just cleaning up, walking out. And you're like, this is a guy who just does what he does and is trying to deal with the fucked up shit from his past. Yeah. The movie makes repeatedly, visually, is trying to make you clear on, yeah, this dude's fucked up, man. Mm-hmm. Like he had shit happen to him, which even to the end is not completely clear the degree to which things happened to him that were really fucked up.
Yeah, and I like that, because you can only imagine how horrific, like, his past was, his childhood was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's got PTSD. I mean, he's also a combat veteran as well.
That's
he's a former FBI agent, but he's gotten into this where he's kind of overweight. He's kind of no offense.
Why'd you look at me when you said overweight? I don't know.
I was just talking to you. Didn't I'm kind of overweight. I'm going to tell you. And he gets offered a new job by his handler, which is essentially there is a teenage girl that is preteen.
Yeah, I was saying younger in the teenage spectrum.
Who has been abducted and her dad is like, I guess, U.S. state senator, I believe.
I think so, something like that.
Yeah, he's a big, important guy.
Or governor.
And like, I just need you to go find her. And he's like, yeah, sure, okay, business as usual, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it ends up not being business as usual, as he does indeed walk into a place, he kills every motherfucker there.
Yeah.
And you have nothing but sympathy, because you're like, this is a place where people go to have sex with underage girls that are being held in white slavery.
Yeah.
And it takes her out. Not takes her out. Didn't put gun to her head. Like, take her out? No. I'm not making a Pulp Fiction reference. I am, but not. And then finds her taken away from him, and him going like, well, this will not stand.
Yeah.
What I liked about this movie is there was a lot of violence. But it never felt gratuitous.
No.
And she would actually cut away from the a lot of the gorier parts to like a shot from like a security camera.
Yeah.
And so you're detached from a lot of the violence.
But it does get pretty
It does get pretty
boring.
Violent. But I love that.
Never felt gratuitous to me.
Yeah, no, it didn't. The violence, it was always with something else. There was always some other point
it was
be made
the
within
story.
The violence, yeah.
Well, that's the thing about this director is that she's a deeply visual, audio, mm-hmm. like, put you in the moment type of director. Mm-hmm. Like Lynn Ramsey, and now after seeing this, and we didn't talk about Kevin, I'm like, I need to go back and watch the other movies everybody's talking about from
yeah.
there. It's an intense, cannot break away feel with, like, every frame being gloriously like thought about here
yes.
of like every shot, every moment of music and Foley. It is one of those type of films where it's deeply into that. My only issue is that ultimately as a plot, this is one of the most generic plots for a tired hitman movie that exists. And it doesn't really ever do anything to break away from that.
No, but at the same time, I think what saves it is the fact that its character is so contained, and even he is not given like these long speeches to like say what's wrong with him, but you know it's really about how all the actions, which are generic in this film, really affect him and the way his physicality changes, the way he reacts to them changes, and what it says so much about him.
Yeah.
I really, yeah, that's where I was really, it was him. He was the sort of innovative part of the film for me.
He's definitely the person in which we are exclusively following.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything that's shot in this movie is from his,
so it's a redemption
not a POV camera, but it's from his point of view. Yeah. It is a redemption movie, but is he ever redeemed?
Well, it's also sort of cathartic for him, in a way. He sort of, I have a feeling that, like, his plight and her plight are very, very similar.
Well, there's a lot of stuff with, like, his mother that is, that he lives with, that he has issues with, like, that she has issues with dementia.
Don't you love that she's watching Psycho when we first meet her?
When we first see him with his mom, it's this really nice, cute relationship. They're joking around. Like, she pretends to be dead.
Yeah.
When he walks in.
Yeah.
Or sleeping. I don't remember exactly which. And then she's like, aha, fooled you. You know, so it's really cute. And then a couple scenes later, he's like yelling at her, come on. And like, she's pissed off at him. And they're like, that was one of my favorite things about this movie is the relationship with his mom. Because later on in the movie, it affects you so much more.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. It totally does. And there's a lot of really dark stuff that happens along the line of this. Don't get too emotionally connected to anyone.
To anybody in this movie.
It's like, it almost, despite the fact that this guy's a professional assassin, it almost feels like like one of those like average guy.
It's a Blue Ruin.
Yeah, yeah.
I like Blue Ruin.
Yeah, exactly.
I love Blue Ruin.
Like, Blue Ruin's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
It's so good.
But didn't you know this movie?
If you hadn't watched Blue Ruin, I'd be like, you need to watch Blue Ruin.
But this movie never stops as horrific as it gets in terms of, you know, the brutality anyways. My God, this is such a beautiful movie to look at.
Oh, it's so gorgeous.
Oh, my God.
And to hear.
Yeah, and to hear. And to hear.
The sound work on this is gorgeous. It's definitely a film that Ramsey is more concerned with you being immersed in its world than she necessarily is in having thought about completely the story being all that interesting. Because I will still say, I'm going to come back to, I don't think the story's all that interesting. She does fascinating things visually and audibly with it. And even with working with our actors, but I think ultimately, when I got to the end, I went, which is, by the way, this is a very short movie. It's like 89 minutes. When you got to the end, I was like, how is this not the first act?
I remember you telling me that, and the more I thought about that after you said that to me, I completely agree with you. I do agree with you. I think that there is definitely room to explore the dynamics between...
It's not like I want a sequel. I just went, like, This is a movie that felt like you could have compressed a lot of what's happening into 25 minutes and then told the story that would have been much more
compressed and then expanded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with that. I feel like they gave it time to breathe, and you know sometimes it's used to a good. They use it well. Some movies use that well.
Which, ironically, there's a lot of stuff in this movie about someone not breathing.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Oh, yeah, but even that is a beautiful shot at the beginning, too. Oh, my gosh.
With Joaquin Phoenix being kind of obsessed with carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's not autoerotic asphyxiation, right? No. It's more like just asphyxiation.
Yeah.
He's not
Yeah, he's, well, I mean, I don't
well,
know.
Well, I got the sense that was his escape from the past when he was a
some
kid.
Some sort of, like, guilt punishment.
Yeah.
He keeps putting shit over his head to make himself like get to that point where he's about to pass out then take it off.
And Dan, if no one thinks that if no one thinks that can be a really great image to watch visually, you are so wrong.
Oh, but that's the thing is like, despite any of my criticisms, this is a gorgeous movie to watch.
For being an action film and a revenge story and like being bloody and violent, it is beautiful.
Yeah.
I just... Ultimately, it felt like it would have been so much more interesting if they had chosen to pull back on the first act of this clearly three-act story, or should have been three-act story, and it never... There are no... It's a first act. This whole movie is a first act.
Well, it's kind of two acts, isn't it?
You think?
I think so. I think the first act is him in his world, and the second act is him and her, or him when, you know, him in his quest to save her. And slash discover what the hell's happening because everyone I talk to is dead.
I would argue the first act feels more like a prologue than a first act.
Yeah, I can sort of see that too. No, I can sort of see that too.
Welcome
to
oneofus.net.
Well, yeah, this is the same sort of argument that you and George had over Game Night,
dude. I still really enjoy Game Night, but it was one of those like. I'm not saying I didn't like it. I'm just saying it could have been better. And I feel like this is one of those things like this. I'm like, I'm not saying I didn't like it because I really liked this a lot. I just think, why isn't this better than it is? You know, why did they make these certain decisions? I'm like, okay, nothing about this felt like it was really invested in telling this, getting deep inside the mentality of this killer. During this period, it was more invested in showing us a bunch of cool, really admittedly cool visual and audio stuff going on. And by the end of the film, I'm like, I still don't feel like I really understand this guy. I feel like I have a clue to who he is. It was almost like it's an art version of a film noir. You know, like it's like, oh, here's just the beginning of this guy's story. But you give me enough, I want to know more about him. I mean, I don't know if that's even necessarily a bad thing. You know, like, you leave me wanting more, isn't that what comedians say all the time?
But
I also felt like this was, like, stretched out to the point where it was a little excessive with the degree of time it spent following up on stuff that could have been compressed to where, when it ends... Where there's like, here's where things are about to get actually character-wise super interesting. It just ends.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to see where it was going to go. I honestly was surprised when it ended. I was like, that was it? Are you kidding? That was like, you just got to this point that like where most movies feel like they're just getting started and that's it. But Lynn Shelton feels like she's spending more time on being interested in those. That not finished exploration of him as a character.
Yeah.
I would watch a sequel of this if it was from the viewpoint of the little girl.
Well, like, I feel like you're asking for like the professional.
No, I'm not.
No, okay.
I'm not. I don't want that.
Nobody wants that.
I don't want
no.
The professional.
Yes.
But I'm not asking for that. But look,
you want Joaquin Phoenix
Jackson? But there's a fascinating thing where it's like, ooh, but holy shit, where does this go from here? That is much more interesting than anything that actually happens in the film.
Okay.
I think the reason for her ending it the way she did,
two endings, by the way.
Well, I think that
this is the point where all the hobbits jump on the bed.
No, I mean I love
the Walking Phoenix. We love you.
For lack of better terms, for the sake of spoilers, I say the first ending in quotation marks. I think that would have been pretty realistic had she not been a part of the equation. You know, without question, I think that would have been the way it would have ended for him.
Okay.
And I love that scene. I mean, not really. I mean, apart from being, you know, just badgering you over the head with the title, at, you know, in that moment, I just think it's a really, really, you know, it says a lot about him, the way he saw himself and the way he saw his place in the world.
Can I say how awesome the actual violent stuff is in here, though?
Oh, God, no, it's great. Yeah, it's
like one of those, like, so exquisitely, agonizingly beautiful, where uh-huh. it's like, oh, my God, all the violence is, like, ugly but pretty at the same time.
Yeah, and, yeah.
I thought I was supposed to be the serial killer. You're giving awesome vibes.
Don't worry, Miguel. Okay. You're still the serial
killer. But we all need to review that when Zac Efron plays that Ted Bundy in that movie that's coming out later this year. We all need to be on the
same page. I'm actually kind of excited
for that, too.
I think Zac Efron is one of those actors people don't give enough credit to. And I'm like, I'm really curious because this is the biggest. All right, never mind.
I'm excited because he looks like him, yeah. Personally. But, anyways, but I think. I love the way that – what I do love about the second ending is that she ended it in – I mean, for lack of a better term, there's hope, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, there is something – some purpose which he has not found before apart from what he makes a living out of,
right.
What his skills are. There's something, you know, else, you know, there that he's being drawn to, or, you know, yeah.
And I would argue this is one of those type of films, like, and I don't mean to say in terms of, like, comparing it specifically to quality, like Suspiria, that there's no way to watch this except really loud and in front of, like, a biggest screen that you can.
Yeah,
this is one of those movies you're not going to get what it's trying to sell you unless you're watching it with a total immersion type technique.
This isn't an airplane movie.
And then I feel like you're going to really enjoy it because as much as I was like, I wanted to see slightly different things, I still came out of it going, that was a very valuable 90 minutes spent
in
the theater.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah, I felt like the
felt like what?
That's my Yoda impression. Don't talk to me about Star Wars, man. I can't do it.
No, we're not doing that. We're not going
I was going to talk to you about the toys that made this episode of Star Wars, but anyways. No. Which I've watched 3 times already because it's a really great episode. Anyway.
I've already been triggered and I've lost my train of thought.
Like, I'm so sorry. No.
You're just a Force ghost. You're never really here.
I like the movie. That's it.
What? You like the movie? That's your...
I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
You're just like, I like the movie. Fuck you guys.
You talk to me about Star Wars and I get triggered.
So, oh, no, so, no.
You're like, you were totally like, God damn it.
What were we talking
about? This movie, it changed my life and I don't remember why because Chris interrupted me.
It was a very valuable 90 minutes, as Chris was saying. And no, I mean, I know and I agree.
It's violent as fuck, but in a very creative way. It's smart. It's beautiful. It's loud in that sort of way that if you're like a Nicholas Winding Refn fan,
there's some more accessibility to this one because there's you know, on a human level, it's. I mean, even though my personal story is nothing like his, but I empathize with him.
It was less disconnected than Refn's films.
Yes,
very disconnected from their protagonists. But there's no question you can't help but make comparisons to it. Mm-hmm. To final thoughts, Frank, you were the last guy to talk, so you go.
Okay. This is not a very dialogue-heavy film, and sometimes that works. That works, and it works in this film because I think, especially because it's Joaquin Phoenix, who, you know, he's great at delivering lines. He's fine, but you know, he is. I mean, even though I didn't like that Johnny Cash movie,
but
I didn't. I'm sorry, I didn't.
He literally walked the line.
Okay.
He's
delivering
lines.
Well, yeah. Well, good for him.
Frank, I fail to see your problem with that movie.
No, I mean. It's just one for me, man. But, you know, but I think that Joaquin Phoenix's strength is really in his physicality as an actor. In the way he moves as every character, you can tell that he's let that character seep into his psyche, into his soul.
I feel like there's a lack of fear with his.
Yeah, no, absolutely. No, he's willingly letting it take him over. Yeah. And
he inhabits his roles, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not, but even in this movie, he's an assassin, but he's not some like fucking totally built like a brick shit house assassin.
No.
He's like, he is kind of fat and out of shape.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like,
no.
You can tell that it's fat on top of muscle, but it's like, I mean, he's a huge
but
guy.
He also, but even that says a lot about how he sees himself. He doesn't really like himself enough to take care of him enough to, in a way that would help him probably improve his job and his survival skills. You feel like he's just clocking in time until he's checks out, you know, of life. But yeah, I think so much about the way he moves, the way he played with the jelly beans said so much about how damaged he was, you know.
Fully working on those jelly beans. Or...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I love that moment. I'm like, totally am that guy. Like, when I eat jelly beans, I do that. Like, one out of every five, I sit and I crush in my fingers and watch them, like, sort of like, because you watch the sugar come out of it.
Whoa.
See, I thought I was weird because I would take a bunch of them, put them in my mouth at the same time, squish them around, and then pull up this big, like, colorful ball and be like, wow.
Well,
that's really cool.
It's not one or the other.
Well, hey, all right.
You're here. You're weird.
But, no, I love just how, and the way he just goes and buys his tools, buys his instruments. It was so casual. It's so how detached he is. I mean, he really is just so, I mean, the level of numbness of this guy. But this case, I love how it just, you know, brings out something that, you know, it makes him face stuff. Essentially, and that's what he's doing, and that's what motivates him. Yeah, and I love that. I think this is a really, really great character study. It is very much in the way the 70s character studies were. I could totally see this being a companion to Taxi Driver in a lot of ways. I mean, this is very intense and very cerebral in that way. It's also one of the most beautiful films I've ever seen. You know, I mean, just the use of color, the use of, you know, the sort of setups, and and the score was so jarring and alarming, but also it was oddly melodic, and, you know, I don't know how she did it, but I think if you take a filmmaker like Lynn Shelton or Ramsey, which one is this?
Did I say Shelton or
I don't know which one it is.
It's Ramsey.
Is it Ramsey?
It's Ramsey. Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
If you take a filmmaker like her, you tell her she's going to make an action film or an action thriller, this is the film she would make. And I do agree. Yeah, I would like to see where this would go on. Because I do think there's another act that's missing. I think there's potential that was not completely realized. But what is there is exquisite, and it's haunting in every sense of the word. So I will give this about 8 out of 10 sticky restaurant checks.
Miguel, what do you think?
My name is Miguel, and I'm in Books of Beer podcast.
Are you ever going to let that go?
No, Books of Beer. Thanks for asking about Books and Beer podcast. No.
Yeah, I get. What's up with Books and Beer podcast? That's on oneofus.net, right?
So I really enjoyed this movie. It was slow. It took its time. It was methodical. The violence wasn't gratuitous, but it was definitely there. You felt it. It was the violence was down to earth. He, like you were saying, he's not a secret agent. He's not James Bond. He's a hired gun, and he's kind of like the way that he goes about it is kind of like an everyman, like we're saying, like a Bruin.
Mm-hmm.
And I really feel like those down to earth movies. I tend to. I'm not a James Bond fan, but I'm a fan of this. So I liked it a lot. I would probably give it 9 out of 10 bullet holes in your glasses.
See, Miguel didn't want to do a TED Talk. You and Michael were glasses.
Well,
baby. To this point, I got 20 minutes, right? All right. So
I wasn't as long as Michael's.
I'm just teasing. I actually, you know, as much as I'm like, I felt like I wanted something different towards the end or out of this, I still can't help but appreciate this for what it is, mm-hmm. because it's a gorgeous fucking movie. Mm-hmm. It's one of those, like, almost every frame is like, damn, this has been... I mean, Lynn Ramsey is one of those directors who lets nothing go. She is like... Mm-hmm. She is making sure that every frame is exactly what she wants it to be. Mm-hmm. And this film absolutely makes that very clear.
This is an uncompromised vision.
It completely is.
This is what the new Death Wish wished it could be.
Yeah. Seriously.
Did anybody see that? I didn't see that.
No, I didn't see it, but I've heard enough to be clear that what you're saying is true. I'll see it when it comes out on Blu-ray. But, you know, one of my favorite things about this movie was not the movie itself. It was the whole, like, collection of movies associated with Joaquin Phoenix that had here in the title, that as if this was a trilogy, because he was in the one he did, that total misstep where he was like had the big beard.
Rapper, he was
I'm still here. Yeah.
and then someone, like, people were doing a bunch of stuff, but the best version was one that he wasn't even in, which was Her, and it was like they added E. He was like, here.
He wasn't Her.
Was he in Her?
Yeah, he was the guy in Her.
Was he?
Yeah.
Why am I thinking it was Jude Law?
I don't know.
Are you having a stroke right now?
I might be.
Oh, gosh.
Monkey, am I having a stroke? Monkey's like, I don't know. Feed me.
Did you get cat food? You're not having a stroke.
Read that story on Books of Beer podcast. George R. Martin monkey treatment.
I don't know what you're talking about. I was referring to my cat. I'm gonna.
Oh, okay. You got a story about your cat.
I don't think George R. R. Martin was referring to my cat specifically. It'd be awesome if he was. I don't think it's likely.
It'd be weird as fuck.
But I do think this is a very beautiful film. My only disappointments were like, it's so good, it should have been better.
Or more, or just more.
Yeah. It's like, it's so good, like, maybe it, there's like, no, everything about it is so great. There really isn't. there's so many great things about it. It's like, maybe the plot should have been a little more of a concern, which I feel like with Lynn Ramsey films has been a concern. Like you're so focused on one element that you don't let the plot evolve. And this feels like one of those movies.
Well, interestingly enough, she walked away from the Natalie Portman movie, Jane Got a Gun.
She did, literally right before starting.
Which is a rather sort of plot-driven.
I actually love Jane Got a Gun.
I do too, but it is a very plot-driven film.
Did she walk away to make this movie?
No, she didn't. She walked away for a creative...
No, it was actually a big deal. She put an incredible amount of work into that film. And
then Jude Law walked away because he wanted to work with her, and he was cast as the villain, and so...
I love Jude Law and Her.
But I actually think, regardless of any complaints, I think this is a pretty phenomenal film. Mm-hmm. I give it 8.5 out of 10 pillow headshots, as you do.
And you know, just like that scene, you know that you can see that act being taken place without even seeing it taking place. Yeah. Just the way everything is arranged is like, this movie really just, everyone tosses the term around visceral. It's such a visceral.
As much as Miguel likes to like joke about being a serial killer, I'm starting to think that
No.
He's like straight up revealing his shit.
Only documentary. No. But I'm saying is I love the way that it's composed. You can almost see the murder taking place without even being there. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, that it gives a new meaning to the word visceral. It does.
Copper, lion.
I dug it.
So you use that brand of duct tape?
No, I use a thicker one. Sorry.
He's more of a, like, he goes shops at, like, the dollar stores for his duct tape.
Yeah,
he's
basically.
Like, come on, how good does it have?
He's more of a zip tie guy.
He's like, I'm going to go to Home Depot and be like, $10 for a roll of duct tape.
I got a bunch of HEB bags in my trunk. I mean, come on.
By the way, if you are, I'm sorry.
No, I'm not. I'm not sorry.
are you apologizing so you don't get killed by Frank? Yes.
Would you like me to leave first?
I'm going to be following the rest of this evening very closely to see what happens next.